In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Coming up on episode 401 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Nissan Rogue Rock Creek, the Can-Am Origin and Pulse, the 2025 and a half Volvo XC90 T8 all-wheel drive Ultra, a bright green Corvette, Jeep Compasses that we may or may not ever get in America, Volvo's XC70, Ford's already raising prices because of tariffs, and a whole lot more. All that coming up next. Oh, and at the end, I'm sorry, but the show got cut short a little bit. The recording accidentally stopped when Nicole had to leave to go catch a flight. So it's a little bit of a shorter one today, but hope you enjoy it anyway. All right, bye. This is episode 401 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam of Bull Salmon of Telemetry.
And I'm Nicole Wakelin of Let's Go With Car Talk this week.
And I'm Roberto Baldwin from SAE International.
Outstanding. Well, we only have Nicole for an hour today because she's got to run off to catch a shuttle to... Are you heading to Savannah?
I am heading to Savannah. Complicated. Tomorrow I'm heading to Savannah. I have to the place to get me to Savannah tonight.
Okay. Well, I will see you there tomorrow. Okay. So, Robbie, you want to go first and tell us what you were riding?
Sure. So I went to Austria. That's why I had to leave early for the last podcast. And I went to Austria to ride the Can-Am electric motorcycles. And I also rode in their little carts. So I rode the Can-Am motorcycles and I drove around in their cool little carts.
What do these carts look like?
Racing, you know, like little carts, like racing
carts. Oh, racing carts. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Like little racing carts. I won.
Are they gas or
I represented cars? They were electric, and so I won. That's all that matters.
That's all you need to know.
That is always the only real thing that really counts.
All you really need to know, I won, and other people didn't. But while I was there, it was rainy. It was like 50 degrees. It was perfect weather for riding motorcycles around Austria, which is incredibly beautiful. And so I've ridden these before, but last time I rode them was in 115 degree weather in Texas. I rode but this time it was less hot. It was I rode the Can-Am Origin, which is a sort of an adventure bike. It's a dual sport motorcycle, and the Can-Am Pulse, which is about the size, it's a naked bike about the size of a 600cc bike, which means that I'm too big for it. It's fine. Like riding it around town would be fine. These are both essentially commuter bikes. Can-Am is very upfront about that. The Pulse has a range of 100 miles.
Is that a nice way of saying that they have a short range?
Yes. The Pulse has a range of 100 miles and the Origin has a range of 90 miles, which is, it's fine when you're, you know, like if I were to ride them right now into the city's maybe 20 miles away from my house. So I would do 40 miles a day, but I would also be driving on the freeway. So I would probably hit, if I were riding, let's say the Pulse, plus I'm big. So if you're big, you're essentially a big giant windbreak. It's just these... like the opposite of a sail. I'm just a big slab of wind resistance. So yeah, I should be fine getting to and from work every day on either one of these bikes. That said, the Pulse, the seat height is about 30-ish inches. My inseam is 36. I'm a very weird.
So you kind of scrunched up a little.
So I'm a little scrunched up. Leg wise, it wasn't too bad. I didn't have like my knees up by my ears like I would on like say a Monster, Ducati Monster. Ducati Monster is a bit more sporty than this, so it's the riding position wasn't too bad. But because I'm still tall, I'm kind of over the front of the bike essentially because I'm so tall, which means I have to look down probably more than I like to see the TFT display, to see how fast I'm going and all the other bits that you want to see on your display. That said, the Can-Am Origin is totally fine. I like that. That I fit perfect on that bike. It's an adventure bike. It's a dual sport, which means you're sitting more upright, so it's a lot easier. Tall people tend to get on these bikes because most of us can't ride anything under like 1200 cc's if it's a sport bike or a naked bike, just because we look like bears riding bicycles. We just look ridiculous. Giant monsters on tiny little tricycles. That's what we look like. Our lives are horrible, but at least we can reach things on the top shelf. What's interesting is both these bikes have passive and active regen. So passive regen, you let off the throttle and the bike starts to slow down. It has two modes, as minimum, maximum, well, three, I guess, if you say off. So off and then minimum and maximum. All three of them are fine. None of them are insanely, the maximum isn't like so bad that you feel like you're getting thrown forward, and minimum just works just, for sort of, backcountry riding and stuff. But they also have, which is interesting, is active regen. And with this, it also has off, minimum, maximum. So the throttle, as you get back to neutral, you turn it forward. And as you turn it forward about up to six degrees, it engages regenerative braking.
Oh.
So you can let's say you are riding down a mountain and you're about to hit a corner. Instead of hitting the brakes, you can actually use the active regen in like minimum or maximum mode. Just like slow yourself down and then, twist off of it and then go through your turn. And it's actually it takes maybe 10 miles to get used to it. That said, because I'm so big on the Can-Am Pulse, it was a lot more, it was difficult to actually use it because I'm so far over the handlebars. What happens is as I'm braking is that my body sort of moves forward. And so it would engage as I'm moving forward, it would slightly engage the regenerative braking. So it was a bit difficult on that bike for a tall person again, to sort of modulate the regenerative braking. On the Origin, which is the DS, the adventure bike, no problems at all. And these are on the same roads because we kept going back and forth on this one section, switching bikes. And so, yeah, it was very much, it's not that there's any difference in how they work. It's just that my body.
you have a goofy body.
I have a goofy body. I have a tall body. I guess goofy's fine too. But that's it. They both have normal mode. They both have an eco mode. They both have a sport mode. They have a rain mode, which is great because it was raining. The off-road. What's nice about the Origin is it has an off-road mode and an off-road sport mode. And when you put in off-road sport, it will remove all of the regenerative braking because you want to be able to sort of like drag your rear and it'll turn off regenerative braking and also turn off anti-lock brakes for the rear brake, because you want to kind of be able to drag your rear tire sometimes while you're riding. So that's pretty cool. So they really thought about the people who actually, and Can-Am has been around forever. They build ATVs, they build side-by-sides, they have three-wheelers. They used to build motorcycles up until about the mid-80s. And they were actually doing pretty well up until there's a bunch of changeovers and there's a bunch of business stuff which essentially sort of stifled their innovation. And then they got passed by everyone, Honda, Kawasaki, Suzuki, etc. But now they're back. They only make electric motorcycles. Everything else is gas powered. Oh, they also make the Sea-Doo and the Ski-Doo, the parent company Rotex BRP. Sorry. So you know you could they also have an electric snowmobile. So the electric snowmobile and the motorcycles have the exact same battery and motor, and so they're sort of moving, you know, able to use that between two different vehicles. That said, I really like these bikes a lot. I've ridden them before. I rode them now. I think, you know, the fact that they've had, you know, decades of experience creating, creating these sorts of, you know, motorsport or activity vehicles means that they sort of knew what they were doing. They also build or design and have built everything in house. The motor they build in house. The inverter, it's an in-house design that's built by someone else. The batteries, you know, they get the cells and they put the batteries together in-house. And so, you know, they really try to do everything on their own, which I think is sort of the smarter thing to do if you can afford it. And because they have so many other items that they sell that they can't afford that, I think that's what Rivian ended up doing in their second generation of their vehicles. Is initially they were trying to buy, you know, they're buying things off the shelf and kind of putting it together as much as they could. And then as soon as they had a little bit more money, they were able to start like doing things in house because it saves money. It reduces, you know, your cost. You know, you can find out, you know, you can remove redundant, you know, sort of weird redundancies that don't need to be there because you're sort of streamline everything. It was a fun time. Anytime you get to ride motorcycles is fun. Anytime you get to ride motorcycles in another country is fun, even in the rain. So hold on. Let me get the pricing really quick on both of these. They are not cheap because they're electric motorcycles. The Origin, this is the dual sport, the tall bike. This starts at $14,499. And the Pulse, wow. This is the naked bike at $14,000. So they are not inexpensive, but they are really good bikes. And it's interesting on both of these trips. You know, I don't do a lot of motorcycle drive programs just because mostly I write about cars. There's not a lot of electric motorcycles. I've ridden pretty, you know, a lot of the Zeros. I haven't ridden the Harley Davidson yet. I don't know why I haven't gotten around to it. I guess I'm lazy.
I was just going to ask you because I mean, this is a fair bit cheaper than the Livewire. I think the Livewire is like $20,000 to start.
Well, it used to be like 30 something grand. It's so incredibly expensive. And the Zeros are really good bikes. The bikes from Zero Motorcycles, those bikes are really good. So really the only real competition for Can-Am right now is Zero.
And The Livewire looks like it's gotten a lot cheaper.
Good.
Well, relatively speaking, now starts at $16,000.
All right. So like at one point it was like in the 30. It was just so.
It was about $30,000 when it first launched.
Yeah, and you could get the same specs from Zero for like 17 or something goofy.
Did it sell well? Did the Livewire sell well, or does it sell well?
No, it's a very. Anyway, what did I just do? I just broke something. There we go. There's a million reasons why it doesn't sell well. One of them is that, you know, Harley Davidson people aren't real. That's not what they want, to be honest. Harley Davidson hasn't done a great job at reaching out to a new audience. And so every time they kind of do it, they immediately back off. So they haven't like created a substantial new audience that's beyond the people who just want, you know, choppers. Anyway, enough about Harley Davidson. So Can-Am, Zero, those are the two bikes. I'm really impressed with these, both of these bikes. And on both of these trips, you know, I'm with people who, this is their job. They go to motorcycle ride programs constantly. That they're the me of motorcycles as opposed to... So seeing them, you know, because you know you can see the people who are a little bit like, I don't know, you know, I've been riding, you know, gas motorcycles for all my life, and that's what I review and I work for, and you can see them like very quickly getting very excited about these bikes, like really liking these bikes. And so when you see that, That I think that just sort of shows like how the electric powertrains are, they're different, but people enjoy them. People who actually, this is what they do for a living, which is ride a lot of motorcycles. And also, but they also understand, you know, there are the limitations to these bikes. I mean, you're never, neither of these bikes are your weekend cruiser. You're not going to, you know, I'm not going to take this bike up to Yellowstone to ride up and over, you know, Yosemite and come down, you know, in Nevada. That's not what this bike is for. There's plenty of just gas powered bikes for that. But yeah, no, I'm a big fan of these bikes. I need to get some of those Zero motorcycles in. They've offered them to me. I just haven't had time. And see the how they go up against the Can-Am bikes. And you know, it's good to see a company coming back.
Yeah.
Or at least not coming back, but coming back at, you know, resurrecting its motorcycles, and in a way that is unexpected. They could have very easily just come back and made a gas bike. That would have been super easy for them, but instead they decided to do this, which is pretty bold.
Excellent.
There you go. I have never in my life ridden a motorcycle, so I'm quiet because I have no context.
I my parents put me on a motorcycle when I was 5 years old before they put me on a bicycle.
Really?
And I immediately wrecked. I immediately crashed and rolled down a hill. But yeah, it was the 80s, man. Who knows?
It was the 80s, man.
it was like either 1979 or 1980. I think it was 1980. But I remember them talking a kid into letting me ride that kid's motorcycle.
Oh my gosh.
And then giving me like a 5-second overview of how the clutch works.
Go.
And then sending me on my way down a hill.
What could go wrong?
Sounds like a great plan. That's a very 80s plan right there.
Yeah. But then after that, like we had an ATC, the three wheeler, the Honda ATC, which has killed
the
people.
The ones that always flip over.
Yeah. So I rode that.
Three wheeled and unstable.
Yeah. So I rode those. I rode one of those for years in the 80s. And that's how I learned how to, you know, shift and do
it's stuff. It's amazing how any of us got through our childhoods.
It really is. I was talking to my brother. My parents bought a single cab truck. There's my parents and my brother and my sister and me, so there's five of us and a single cab truck. That was the vehicle they decided to buy. So we would all just like, one of them would sit in my mom's lap, I would, and like we just kind of get crammed in there, but most of the time we just sat in the bed. I'm not with a cover. Like we,
I remember doing that. I remember sitting in the bed
on the wheel hump and just like hanging out there on that wheel hump as you're just driving down the road at 60 miles an hour.
And those things had very bouncy suspensions.
Oh yeah. You'd bounce all over the place back there. Oh my gosh. I remember doing that. That's probably not wise in retrospect. What were our parents thinking?
I think, you know, when they talk about how the boomer generation was so huge and Gen X was so small.
That's why we bounced out of the back of the truck.
I think there was a lot more of us.
The generation started out much larger. We're just the hardiest of them.
We're just the ones that made it.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media.
All right.
Nicole?
Yes. I have the, I always think it's weird when they do this, the 2025.5 Volvo XC, that's what it says, 2025.5 Volvo XC90 T8 all-wheel drive Ultra, which is a lot. That's a lot of words for a car. I didn't know there was a half year on this, but that's what that normally implies, is something's changed mid-year. And I couldn't figure out what the 0.5 was, but that's what I've got. So this is the three-row plug-in hybrid version of the XC90. It has six or seven passengers, depending on how you configure it. It's a beautiful SUV. It's very Volvo, feels very Volvo. Like, it has their, they call it Nordico. Instead of real leather, you can get this Nordico, which is like their version of fake leather. It's funny to me that no one just says fake. Like you can't say a used car, it's previously owned. You can't say fake leather. You have to have a fancy name for it, so it sounds like it's still cool, but it's basically fake leather. But it is really nice. It doesn't feel cheesy. It's like actually a really nice texture, really nice surface to it, and I like it. It looks good. And this one also had brown ash wood trim, which was weird because I like wood trims in a car. And Russ sat down. He's like, I don't like this. He hated the wood trim in the car. And I was like, I don't like this. The other part was that he didn't like that Orfor's crystal gear shift that you can get on Volvos, which again, I think looks cool. Do you guys like the crystal gear shift? I think it looks neat.
It's a nice touch.
I thought it looked kind of cool. Yeah, Robbie's giving a thumbs up. I don't know what Russ's problem is. He's like, I don't like this. I don't like the. And I'm like, well, then don't buy a Volvo.
He's just a grumpy old man.
He was being a grumpy old man in the Volvo XC90 T8 all-wheel drive Ultra. This is not an inexpensive car. The price for mine, and I had a bunch of packages, was $88,695. That includes, like, there's a Bowers & Wilkins premium audio system that added $3,200, a $1,700 lounge package. They have an air suspension package you can get that is $1,800. And do you guys want to take a guess at destinations since I'm talking about the monies?
$1,200. $1,395.
Robbie gets it by $5. It's $1,295. He's $5 closer than you are. So $1,295, yeah. So not crazy expensive. Robbie's like, yeah, go me. He's so relieved. Like, yeah.
As long as Robbie wins, that's all that matters.
As long as Robbie
all
wins,
that all matters. That I won the cart thing, which was very fun.
Right.
And this.
This is your winning streak.
Well, there were two carts. I didn't overall win because there was two different races. So I don't know if I would have, if they had pitted me with the winner of the other race.
No, we don't need to know this. We just need to know you won. Just
all I know that I won the one race.
Just leave it as you won. And just everyone can just wonder what you won.
I cut over 2 seconds from my time from qualifying to actual racing.
Go Robbie.
Per lap.
Woo-hoo. Go Robbie.
did you do the balloons there, Robbie?
I think
that's because you put up the two fingers. No, it did put up balloons when you said that. Balloons just. Oh, there they go. There's balloons floating all over the screen on Robbie's screen. Just Robbie, because Robbie's the winner. That's why. I don't know what triggered that. I think it is the two finger when you hold up like two for like a peace sign. Mine doesn't do that. Wait.
There it goes.
Nope, it's just a Robbie thing.
Huh.
Because you're special.
I'm going to do this the entire podcast. I'm just going to leave my fingers up.
I'm just going to let the balloons float by. So power for this vehicle comes from a 2-liter twin turbo 4-cylinder, 8-speed automatic transmission. This has 455 combined horsepower, 523 pound-feet of torque. It's got a lot of oomph. It moves. You know, this is a 3-row SUV. It's relatively heavy, but it doesn't feel that way. I mean, you hit the gas in this and it really goes. It's actually really nice to drive. We have had like torrential downpours. Half the state is flooded. So it's just been this constant heavy rain, heavy wind, awful, awful weather. And that can do, it can make a lot of noise and it just makes driving not a heck of a lot of fun. But this was really quiet. I was impressed by how quiet this was. Even I can see like the trees whipping around outside the window. I can hear the rain on the roof, but it was impressively quiet. And I appreciate that, especially if you're in something that's a 3-row, you probably have kids in there and kids probably means at some point they're napping and you don't want the wind or a passing truck or something waking them up. So it was a really nice comfy car. I think it'd be great for road tripping. I thought it was, the handling was good. I mean, it has that, it's not a sporty vehicle despite its horsepower, but it does have sharp handling to it. It's that kind of thing where it handles well, but because it's not sporty, don't expect it to be super tight and super engaging, I guess, on sharp turns. You know, it's a little bit more relaxed, but it is responsive enough that if you like driving, you're going to probably like driving this car. It has some, you know, it has a lot of bells and whistles. Again, we're looking at almost 90 grand for this thing. There's an 11.2 inch infotainment touchscreen. It has a 12.3 inch digital instrument cluster. It has that, as I mentioned before, that fancy upgraded Bowers & Wilkins audio system. This is a lovely vehicle. I don't know. The pricing is so premium on this. I'm not sure how competitive this really is. You're definitely getting a luxury car. And in this is the Ultra trim, which is the top. There's a Core, Plus, and Ultra. So this is the most expensive version of this, I think, that you can get. I'd probably opt for something maybe a little bit lower, just because it's kind of pricey. But still, you're getting a Volvo. You're getting Volvo quality, that sort of comfortable luxury interior that doesn't scream luxury in your face. I think the most blingy thing in it is that gear shift. And it's not especially blingy because it's crystal and it's kind of elegant and you know, refined bling, as opposed to, like, you know, fake chrome trims that some OEMs throw in and just ridiculous amounts of piano black. So overall, I liked this. I thought this was a nice vehicle. I enjoyed driving it. I mean, there's 33 miles of electric range. So on an average day, you can probably drive around and never even use that gas engine. So you can, you know, it's a decent amount of range for just a plug-in hybrid. So overall, I gave a thumbs up to the XC90 T80 all-wheel drive Ultra.
Yeah. So the 25.5 model year, they did a pretty substantial refresh on it.
Was it not for 25? Was that whole refresh the 25.5, not the 25?
Yeah, it was a mid-year refresh.
That's right. As I was looking, I was like, what am I missing? Okay, so that all
because they already started selling 25s, the pre-refresh 25s last fall.
Okay.
And then they brought out they showed the refresh, I want to say, in like November, December.
Okay. So that's why. So that I was trying to figure out everything I was reading, and I was just getting confused looking at it. I'm like, it looks like it was refreshed for 25. So all those changes were just the 25.5. Okay, cool. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just as a point of reference, you know, my friend Casey, who last summer he and his wife had an XC70, not the plug-in hybrid model. They had the T6, which is T6, you know, it's the turbocharged and supercharged one. That was about 300 and some horsepower. Mm-hmm. And I told the story last summer, you know, about the crazy catastrophic engine failure they had. Mm-hmm. With the pebble stuck in the between the ribs of the serpentine belt pulley.
Yeah.
So they when they replaced that, they bought a T8, a 2024 XC90 T8, so the plug-in hybrid version, in July of last year. And as of like a week ago, they just filled the tank for the fourth time
in
almost a year. Yeah.
See, that's incredible.
So like, they're doing mostly electric driving.
Yeah. I mean, Russ, when he drives his car, and he has even less range on his hybrid, and I mean, I feel like he never puts gas in it. Like, every time we see a charge for like gas at the credit card, I'm like, oh my gosh, he put gas in it. Like, he never has to put gas in it.
and also from a price perspective, you said this one was 79,000.
This one is 88,000.
Oh, 88,000.
88,000. But I mean, it has 3, 4, 5, 6. It has like $8,000 or $9,000 worth of packages packed onto the Ultra trim, all on top of it being an Ultra. These additional packages. So it's got a lot on it. So I think if you just, you know, don't go quite so crazy with the packages, this is a pretty well-equipped version. You can knock a chunk off that price.
So a BMW X7 xDrive 40i, the base X7, which is their three-row, which is similar in size to this, 375 horsepower. It's not available as a plug-in hybrid. It starts at $85,000.
So this isn't such a bad deal.
Yeah. When you compare it to the premium SUVs, you know, Mercedes GLS, you know, is somewhere in that neighborhood as well. So they're all up, you know, way up there in price.
Yeah. It's definitely beautiful. I mean, the thing is, for that price point on this, it absolutely feels like a car that is that price point. And just the comfort level and the handling and the quietness and things like, you know, there's ambient lighting and the quality and the look and the feel of the trims. You got heated everything, ventilated. You know, it has all the bells and whistles that you would expect from a premium car. So it's not as if you're buying it and thinking you got cheated, you know, you missed out on stuff. It feels like a luxury car.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else on the Volvo?
No, that's it on the Volvo.
All right. I had the 2025 Nissan Rogue Rock Creek all-wheel drive. So as with so many automakers, you know, Nissan in the last couple of years has started making off-roady-ish editions of a lot of their vehicles.
Off-roady-ish. That's the official moniker of these types of vehicles. Off-roady-ish.
I think the first one they did was the Pathfinder and then, you know, they added the Rogue. So just to, you know, to emphasize the point about off-roady ish, it's got, some all-terrain tires on there. It's not lifted. It does have black, wheel arch flares, flat black wheel arch flares. When you look at it from the front, there's a couple of bright red accents at the bottom edge of the bumper that from a distance look like they could be recovery hooks.
Psych.
The key is from a distance, they look like they could be recovery.
Oh, geez.
When you actually get up close, you realize, no, they're just red accents painted on the bottom edge of the bumper to look like recovery hooks, but there's not actually any kind of gap there.
Aww.
So not really an off-roader. It has, you know, for this type of vehicle, the Hyundai XRTs and things like that, you know, within the limits of its limited ground clearance, you know, it can do some very, very light off-roading with those tires. At least the tires give you better grip, you know, when you're on a trail. So if you're just, you know, going up a two-track up to, you know, a cottage or something like that, it'll be fine. But this is not something you will want to take to an ORV park. The Rock Creek does have a roof rack, pretty nice roof rack. So you can, you know, mount all kinds of stuff up there. You can, you know, put your bikes up there. You can get accessories to mount your bikes up there, put your surfboards and paddle boards and assorted other stuff, you know, extra storage for camping gear. Sort of looks the part. The color of this thing is pretty cool. It's let me see if I can find the actual color name. It's like a light brown color. And there's lots of black in the grill. And of course, as a Rock Creek edition, it gets the three slots along the leading edge of the hood, like you have on the Pathfinder and the Frontier and so on, you know, kind of harkening back to the old hard body pickups and original Pathfinder of the 1980s. All the Rogues now have the 1.5 liter three cylinder turbo. It is the variable compression turbo. So it's basically a three cylinder version of the engine that they have in a lot of the Infinities and in the Altima. 201 horsepower, 225 foot-pounds of torque. It doesn't actually feel like it's got 200 horsepower. I think mostly because of the CVT, it just doesn't feel that quick. It's okay. It's adequate.
Good enough.
No.
Yeah. Very no, cool. I mean, for most people, for most driving, you know, you're not going to win any drag races with this thing, except maybe against a Sentra with a CRT. Or CVT, fuel economy was, you know, so. It's rated at 27 city, 32 highway, 29 combined. I got like 27 on my fuel economy loop. Not terribly impressive. There's no hybrid version or plug-in hybrid or anything like that. There is a hybrid version of the Rogue coming, I think, next year. We don't have that yet.
Am I allowed to talk about that? I forget.
Well, they've said, you know, that there's a hybrid version coming eventually.
I drove it. Wait, am I allowed? God dang it, I can't remember. I think I'm allowed to talk about it.
Robbie, just shut up.
It's fine.
Poor Robbie. He was winning everything till right at that moment.
Like, what? I'm not allowed to talk.
Don't say anything else.
Say nothing else, Robbie.
It has the original Pro Pilot Assist, you know, hands-on lane centering, none of the hands-free stuff. The interior is nice enough. The seats are comfortable. There's good room in the front, both the front row and the back seat. It's only a two row. None of this nonsense about trying to stuff a useless third row into this thing, because it's just not big enough for a third row. You know, so you have plenty of room. There's plenty of cargo space in it. The Rock Creek that I had the base 8-inch infotainment screen, which means that unlike the last Rogue that I drove last year, which was a Platinum, the Platinums, the upper trim levels, I think the SR or SVSL, I don't know, I can't remember which order the trims go in, but the two upper trims have a larger screen and have an Android automotive based system with Google services. This does not. It's just an 8-inch. It does have support for wireless CarPlay and Android Auto. So that, you know, that works fine. But unlike a lot of vehicles that have wireless Android Auto and CarPlay support, to initially set it up, you do have to plug it in with a USB cable. And then, then once you've configured it, you know, once you've paired your phone to the car over the USB cable, then after that, you can leave it unplugged.
Is that a normal thing? Have we seen yours do that?
I've seen it on some vehicles, but most of them you can do it without actually plugging it in first.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a fine, you know, upper compact crossover, smaller midsize crossover, you know. Would I take it over a CRV or a RAV4 or a Tucson? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, depends on the deal you could get on it. Sticker price on the Rock Creek.
Depends on the deal. If they'll give it to me, I'll take it.
I probably wouldn't spend the money on the Rock Creek, because, you know, you frankly don't get enough for that. You know, you're probably better off with, you know, one of the other trim levels. All in. You know, this one had the Rock Creek premium package for $800. It gives you the hands-free power liftgate, reverse tilt-down mirrors, four-way power passenger seat, wireless charging pad, and heated steering wheel. And then the premium paint for $425, and cargo liner, which is actually pretty nice. You know, if you are doing things like going to the beach or something like that, you get this big, nice, really nice rubber cargo area liner, and then the frameless rearview mirror, $38,990, so just shy of $39,000. A lot of money for something with fake recovery hooks.
Yeah, I just was looking. I had to pull up an image. I'm like, to see what it looked like. And you're right. From a distance, it does look like fake. Look, they're real. And knowing they're fake, I thought. Unless you said that. The picture makes me think it's real from a distance. Yeah.
So you're out in the wilderness and you see a Rock Creek stuck and you look and you're like, oh, they have some recovery hooks. I'm going to go help this person.
I can help those guys.
And then you get all the way down there. That's not it. I mean, you can still help them. It's just not ideal.
Yeah. You got to reach under and strap something to the suspension control arms or something.
You think it's going to be easy and you go, oh, fudge. When you
Nope, not so easy. Wow. So you want to guess at the destination charge?
$995.
$1,100.
Robbie's got it again.
Robbie, on his win streak. Do your peace sign. Make the balloons come back up again. You just have balloons for that. 1, 2, 3. Where are the balloons?
Yeah. Oh, look at all the balloons.
$1,390. Yeah.
It's more than the Volvo. Oh, my gosh.
You do get 3 scheduled oil changes with it, though.
Oh, well, cool. That makes it all worth it.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Poor Nissan.
All right.
Sigh says everything.
let's move on. The 2026 Corvette's getting some updates. In addition to the ZR1 that's coming, What is the one thing about the C8 Corvette that nobody really likes?
The wall. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Well,
so many buttons.
They're tearing down the wall. The wall of buttons in the 26 Corvette. Particular story I've linked actually doesn't have that picture of the interior, but there are pictures of the interior floating around. It's got a bigger infotainment screen. The button wall is gone. They've got a row of buttons across the bottom of the infotainment screen now, because it should be.
Yeah.
But the best thing about it, this new color, Roswell green metallic.
I love that it's Roswell green. If there's not a little alien hidden somewhere on this car, like there's an Easter egg of two, like a little stereotypical alien face with the big oval eyes, I'm going to be so disappointed.
This is like a seriously bold shade of green. I love this.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's coming, later this year. Good improvement for the Corvette.
And, that was the one thing I never liked. Those buttons were the one thing that I never liked. The buttons were so, and if you were the passenger, I know it's a driver-centered car, but if you were the passenger, they were impossible. Like you couldn't.
Because they were tilted towards the driver. Right?
You literally couldn't use them.
I think there was like a row of 14 buttons stacked along the top edge of this wall, and they were all identical.
Yep.
And, you know, you couldn't really use it without looking at them.
No.
And they weren't really clearly marked either, so.
It was a weird design choice, and it was like such a neat vehicle. And I'm like, wait, but what happened here? Did somebody take a nap when this was approved? It was the worst idea. And I'm glad. Thank you, Chevrolet, for getting rid of that. That broke my heart that the buttons were so.
All right. Jeep. This week last week, in Europe, they unveiled the new Compass, the next generation Compass.
Cool.
And this is going to be it's going to launch in Europe this year, built in Italy at the Melfi, Fiat Melfi plant. It's going to be available as a hybrid, a plug-in or a mild hybrid, a plug-in hybrid, and a battery electric version with up to 650 kilometers of range. So about 400 miles of WLTP range. So probably somewhere around 330, 340 miles of EPA range, the electric version, 375 horsepower and all wheel drive. And guess what?
What?
You can't get one.
Womp, womp.
Stellantis has been having some issues of late.
And you think?
They had been retooling their Brampton, Ontario assembly plant to build the Compass for North America for 2026. Currently, our Compass has come from Mexico, and they were going to build it in Canada. And then somebody got elected and signed a bunch of executive orders and signed more executive orders to change his mind and signed some more executive orders to change his mind some more. And so right now, Stellantis has apparently paused work on the retooling the Brampton plant where they were going to build the Compass. And at the moment, they do not have a plan for what they're going to do with Compass in North America.
That's what happens. The automakers don't like chaos.
No.
Well, to be honest, the companies don't like chaos.
Nobody likes chaos.
Everybody hates chaos. So it makes it hard when you have big, expensive things you have to build that require lots of planning and lots of money and lots of materials. And chaos is not good for those scenarios.
One of the first editions is the Hawaii version.
Yeah.
The Hawaii version?
So there's the new Jeep Compass first edition Hawaii.
Wait a minute. Do they have a picture of what that means?
And then the green one.
Color scheme.
Is it the green one?
Yeah. And then the other is a new Jeep Compass first edition Pacific, which is blue.
Ooh.
I like the Hawaii.
Yeah, I like the Hawaii.
I just like to have it here. Yeah. Whatever they want to call it. Whatever color and theme they'd like to give us.
They, the new Compass is 6 inches longer than the current one.
It looks good. I like the way I like it. It looks really good. I think they did a nice job in the style. I love the available propulsion systems, but Sun Panda, we will not have these.
Not for a while, anyway.
Indeed. What if we do this? Does a panda show up on the video?
What are you doing?
No,
I'm trying to make more things happen in the StreamYard, but
I would love to know what random setting you have to get balloons to float by.
I think that's probably actually the Mac. That's the
Mac OS stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, you're an Apple guy, that's why. Okay.
And then speaking of tariffs, as expected, prices are going up. Last week Ford had their Q1 earnings call. And they made a bunch of money, but they also announced that they are forecasting about $1.5 billion in tariff-related costs for this year, for 2025. And as a result, the three models that they build, that they assemble in Mexico for the U.S. market are all going up in price. The Mustang Mach-E, the Maverick, and the Bronco Sport going up by as much as $2,000.
Because the Maverick hasn't gone up enough.
Yeah.
I know.
The Maverick apparently is going to be.
That was such an. It was so affordable once upon a time. For a hot minute, it was such a steal. And then poof.
I'm old enough to remember.
I remember when the Maverick was a deal.
There's still one parked right across the street from me here. My neighbors have their blue 2022 Maverick hybrid XL.
Yeah.
With steelies on it. $19,995.
Good job.
Yeah. So any Mavericks or any of those models built after May 2nd. Oh, fireworks. Any of those built after May 2nd will be subject to the price increase, and those vehicles built after May 2nd should be arriving at dealers in the U.S. Latter part of June.
Yeah.
So buy now or forever hold your peace and pay a couple extra grand.
Buy now or hope for, I don't know, the best. Who knows?
So Volvo also announced a new model last week that sadly it doesn't look like we're going to get. It is specifically targeted to the Chinese market. It's built on the Geely SMA platform, and it is an extended range plug-in hybrid, which near as I'm able to figure out, I reached out to Volvo and haven't gotten an answer yet. Mm-hmm. But my understanding of this is that it's not an EREV, so it's not an extended range EV. Where the engine doesn't drive the wheels. It's basically a plug-in hybrid like the XC90 that you were driving, Nicole.
Yeah.
But with a significantly larger battery that gives it, up to 200 kilometers of range, which is about 120 miles of range. And I'm trying to remember which cycle that's on. I think it's actually WLTP. Probably somewhere around 90 miles of electric range. And this is a midsize two row. So it's actually bigger than the XC70 or bigger than the XC60, smaller than the XC90. They released some images that are all kind of in the shadows, but it's got the typical, Volvo, current Volvo styling language. What do you think?
I don't know. What am I supposed to think? Oh, another nice toy you brought onto the podcast today that we can't have. So.
Yeah. More stuff we can't have. Sorry about that.
But no, it looks good. I think it's, I mean, it does. It looks good. I mean, it's not for our market, so it doesn't, but all that's packed into it sounds really good. But
speaking of stuff we can't have.
No, let's not keep doing that. What are you torturing me this week?
Just more, one more
stuff you can't have, Nicole. What now?
Laser.
Ferrari is actually going to build an electric vehicle. like a full battery electric vehicle. They have plug-in hybrids, but they're building an actual EV. And it's going to be revealed in full on the 9th of October at their Capital Markets Day. This thing looks pretty sharp.
That's pretty cool.
Is that something we can't have? Or are you just saying because it's going to be a Ferrari that I can't afford, we can't have it?
More the latter.
I mentioned here by auto car. So what's this at the bottom? I think at the bottom, this. Dang, darn it. I hit this website is driving me nuts. slowly. As I'm scrolling, like an ad will pop up and it shoots all the text down.
That's just happened. I'm trying to scroll down. I'm like, I can't scroll. Trying to scroll.
There we go. All right. Well, I can't really tell too much. The one that's connected to the Ionity charging station.
It's actually a little bit more like a crossover.
Yeah.
It does. It looks a little weird, though. I mean, they're clearly trying to make that weird, right?
Yeah.
And
this is, looks like a testing in Sweden. So it's got a high-powered light bar on the front. You could see the reindeer from, a few miles away before you hit them.
That looks like something like a kid would design. Like, I've designed a car. This is what I want to build for this weird light bar right on the front of the hood.
Those are actually pretty common in Sweden. These high-powered lights.
It looks like a light bar. It looks like the kind of thing a toddler would design.
Yeah.
I can see so far.
I can see into the future.
Okay. So something we can have. Hyundai is starting to deploy plug and charge. Yay. So they're
dun, dun, dun.
Updating software on their EVs, starting with the Ioniq 5 and the Ioniq 9. So you get plug and charge. So when you go to an Electrify America or a Tesla supercharger, you don't have to mess around with any apps. As long as you've set up your payment method in the vehicle, you're all good to go. Just plug in.
That's my biggest struggle is like when apps don't recognize, or it's like, oh, the app has logged me out. I got to log me back in. Oh, wait a minute. I'm going to stay in here. Wait, hold on. I hate that. So just plugging in, having it work. That's amazing.
GM.
My car. It's for 2025.
GM, rolled out updates for the for their EVs to enable supercharger access, but for some reason they opted not to put in plug and charge. And I had a Cadillac Lyric. I was testing the Electron Vortex charging adapter over at the supercharger station, and made it a real pain because I had to plug it in and then open up the Tesla app to initiate the charging session and then later stop the charging session. I don't want to have to do that. I want to just plug it in and go.
It should be easier.
Yeah.
I have a 2024 Ioniq 5 and this doesn't
work. You are out of luck. Yeah. It's 25.
I'm SOL.
You are SOL, Robbie. Your winning streak is over.
Well, I mostly use Electrify America too because I get free charging. It's not even available on this. It's Iona, which supercharger. Okay, ChargePoint.
There are 13 Iona stations open now.
13.
Yeah.
Yeah, but none of them are near me. They're all in places that actually need charging. Like we're okay in Northern California.
They just started a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Give them time.
They're supposed to have 200, I think, by the end of the year.
Yeah, well, but they're putting them they're needed. The last place that needs more, like Northern California, should be the last place because there's a lot of charging here.
Yeah,
it's not like other places where you're like, oh god, there's only one charging station.
Well, even though I have three different DC fast chargers within a mile and a half of my house, I still want an Iona station here.
Yeah, they look nice.
Yeah,
you might get one. You could.
It might at some point. Although they probably won't put it right here, but yeah, well.
Right at the end of your driveway.
Yeah. All right. Last Sunday was the F1 race in Miami. And usually at F1 races, before the race, they have a driver's parade. Like in IndyCar, all the drivers, each of the drivers hops into the back of a Chevy Silverado and they, go around the track and wave to the fans and everything as they're going around the track before they climb into their cars. At F1 races, you know, they all climb under the back of a flatbed pickup or flatbed truck, and you know, they all ride together. For the Miami race, they did something new. They partnered with Lego, and Lego built 10 full-size running Lego F1 cars.
Did you see the videos from this?
Yeah, I did.
They're absolutely hilarious. Some of them, the drivers are recording, and you can just hear them laughing and sassing each other like a bunch of 12-year-olds. The funniest. It was my favorite part of it all.
They're two-seaters, so each of the two drivers from each team rode together in one car. One was driving, and the other one would be doing stuff. And these things go 12 miles an hour, which is pretty impressive for a Lego car. But these things are made up of like 440,000 pieces for each.
Well, and they started off and they're all driving and they're like, one guy's like, go faster. He's like, I can't go faster. And then all of a sudden they start bumping into each other. Yeah. Like they're like damaging. I'm like, oh gosh, it took like how many man hours to make those Lego vehicles? And then whatever, one lap around the track, crash, crash, crash. Everyone's missing fenders and front ends and Lego bits everywhere. They still ran, but they were not as pretty as when they started.
Yeah. But these are pretty impressive Lego cars.
They were. They're very impressive. It was fun. If you haven't Googled to find the various videos that are out there, like the shorts, it's hilarious. It's really funny to watch these guys racing around the track in Lego cars.
I'll include a video in the show notes.
There you go. Because it's fun.
A little piece of advice from the Autopian this week. If you have a Volvo XC90 or sorry, EX90, do not photograph it while it's turned on with your iPhone. It may destroy the camera in your phone.
Oh, I'm reading this.
Yeah. The laser the Luminar LiDAR sensor on top of the windshield is eye safe. It won't hurt your eyes, but it will hurt your phone.
No way.
Yeah.
Well, I guess how many people take pictures of their cars, generally speaking? That's an us thing. That's an automotive journalist thing, I think.
Somebody buys a new car, takes a snapshot of it, posts it on Instagram or something.
I guess that's true. You might post, be like, I bought a new car. Click. That's true.
So be careful if you're photographing your car that has LiDAR on it. It might destroy the sensor in your camera sensor in your phone.
That seems like a bad thing to have the car designed that way, but whatevs.
All right. I know you've only got a couple of minutes left, Nicole.
I do. I have mere moments.
We've been rushing through the stories. Yeah. What, Robbie?
I was just like saying dun dun dun.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
We got one left. So the new Mercedes CLA, it's launching in Europe and other markets this year. I think we get it next year. It's going to be the first Mercedes with an SAE J3400 charge port on it, also known as NACS. It's the first one they've done with an 800 volt electrical architecture. So it can charge at like 320 kilowatts. But, some stories came out last week that you will not be able to charge it on a 400 volt DC fast charger, which is like Tesla superchargers.
Why?
All but two. And I don't even think those two are open yet because those are all 500 volt. All the Tesla superchargers that are available now are 500 volt. So they don't work with 800. They have to step down. And Lucid and Hyundai, they both do it with the rear motor. And I forget how Porsche does it.
So, I was actually on a call earlier this afternoon. It was a media roundtable call with Ola Källenius, the CEO of Mercedes-Benz. And I actually asked him this question. It's like, why did they opt not to have support for lower voltage DC charging? You know, and what he told me was that... actually, the stories were not true, or at least they're not true as of today. They might have been true last week, but apparently there will be an adapter that you can plug in that allows you to charge the CLA on 400 or 500 volt chargers, on chargers with less than 800 volts.
So the adapter has to do the step down versus like the motor.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah. He didn't give any details, but I'm guessing that this is something that they probably decided in the last week.
Like, oops, this was not what we intended.
Yeah. Cause you know, the only 800 volt chargers in the United States with a NACS cable on them are those Iona chargers.
No, there's the charge point has chargers with 800 with that are
do they, 800 do they volt. Have some?
Yeah, oh, they have the Omniport. Yeah.
Okay. I haven't seen any of those in the wild yet though.
Oh yeah, they're out there like three or something like. There's not very many, okay. But they're out there. But yeah, that's like saying you know there's a Tesla charger that also does 800.
But according to Kalanius, he says they will have an adapter that allows you to charge the CLA on a 400 or 500 volt charger.
All right.
There you go.
So will it be NACS to right. NACS or will it be CCS to NACS? So you have to have
see
two.
Nicole.
Bye, Nicole. Bye, guys.
See you tomorrow.
So I'm curious how the adapter will work. Will it be CCS to NACS or will you give you two adapters, one CCS?
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.